Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on July 18th, 2013. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time and 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight we have a fascinating guest in Kim Pickett, who is an energy worker, body worker, and intuitive healer who has studied body work and energetic techniques for more than 25 years. Her methods include five-element shiatsu, traditional Chinese medicine, cranial sacral therapy, Taoist healing techniques, and more. Her somatic studies include Alexander technique, myofascial release, T-touch, bioenergetics, myotherapy, and Wilhelm Reich's structural character analysis, yoga, hatha, kundalini, and bikram, meditation, breathwork, Mongolian, Taoist, as well as animal communication with many breeds of animals and with human beings is in her work. She has a genre of work that reflects the direction that we are headed in the world cycles, as we move into a new era, as we move beyond just seeing the physical evidence of things and understanding that the manifest comes from the unmanifest. Kim understands that because not only does she realize that energies are the product, are the source of everything that we see, but she has used her talents to work with that as they influence the life of animals and of people. In the process of doing this, she has also discovered the effects of solar radiation fluctuations in her patients in tandem with the solar sunspot cycle, often a 22-year cycle which reached its solar maxima last year and extended even longer than they expected. So in the realm of energy itself and understanding the cyclic influences on us and representing where we are going in mass and world consciousness as we recognize these things and embrace the invisible is tonight's guest, Kim Pickett. Kim, are you there?
Yes, David. Thank you for such a nice introduction.
Well, I'm so excited about having you on the show tonight. I have heard some wonderful things about your work. There's a plethora of testimonies on your site from people who have been amazed at what you do. Could you tell us just a little bit of an overview, Kim, of the work that you do?
Well, just helping the energy field reinstate because of so many of the cultural biases and the social mores that we've been taught, it's easy to disconnect from our ground and in our root, and the body suffers. So reinstating that with the body work is useful, but the applied kinesiology, which takes the intelligence of the universe and gets it available to us, because the body carries this intelligence, and all we have to do, it's like plugging in the computer. Once you plug it in and ask it the right questions, it spits out some pretty good answers. And we can, through applied kinesiology, identify all the compromised organs and glands. The intelligence of the body can do this for us, and then indeed tell us exactly what from nature will feed that, will support that, will balance that.
This is amazing. Yeah, because in the 20th century, it was a lot of just treating symptoms. And currently, unfortunately, there seems to be a very heavy trend in just medicating everything. But you're actually looking at the source. This is where holistic medicine started going decades ago and working with in your patients direct on. How did you first discover a feeling for this, Kim?
Well, way long ago, I had just qualified for the screening trials for the United States Equestrian Team shortly thereafter. I was in a car accident.
Oh my.
So suddenly, I had an enormous amount of compromise in my body, and traditional medicine couldn't help me. They said it was in my head, and of course, everything's in our head. So yes, it was in my head as well as in my body. So all these non-traditional points of view that began to heal me, I slowly started filling my pockets full of certificates and with the trainings that I had taken for all these modalities. And little by little, I could feel the chi, the intelligence in my body reawakening. And I healed more and more and more and more. And it's quite easy now to go and help clients do the same for themselves.
My goodness, you mentioned on your site that you have a unique and integrated blend of somatic, neuromuscular, and energy-based biowork systems, and that you speak of the body to the body in its own powerful language. So once you recognize these things in yourself, you will be able to tune into these things in your patients. The old saying, it takes one to know one. So did you find that you had more of a sensitivity of, well, is it laying hands on, Kim, or just feeling? How do you recognize these things in your patients?
Yes, healer, heal thyself. So as I began to feel the resistances in my body and learn how to clear them, I'm able to do the same for humans as well as horses, as well as dogs, as well as cats. They all have different signatures, but we all have energetic fields that get compromised, and we have energy patterns that are either too full or too empty. Yin and yang is a combination of the two of those, and sometimes we either get a little too full or a little too empty in certain places energetically. So feeling the resistance or feeling the emptiness or feeling the fullness is a good place to start. And, of course, I use horses as large canvases to teach people how to do this for themselves or for their dogs or for their cats or for their horses. I use a horse in the barn to teach this. It's a two-hour experiential called Horses Healer, but it's just awakening this inner intuitive intelligence that we all have, and if we don't use it, we lose it. It's like an open window. Let's open it and shut it and open and shut it so that the rust kind of gets worked way through, but it's an instrument that we all have that we just simply don't utilize enough because there's, you know, a lot of value these days in using the mind.
And feeling the feeling is something I think we're moving towards. The 20th century that brought us a great many miracles and had so many blessings for us, especially in standards of living and more and
yes.
Miracle drugs and so forth. And thank goodness for all of that. And people have running water that didn't have it. But however, there becomes a time for a change. And in the process of that, we were a little insensitive as to why we were improving one thing, what we're destroying in order to do that. And it did seem to be a century that we come from where we were might makes right, and we were not sensitive to these things. We were very much into physical reality while without understanding the energy and without feeling the feeling. And now that we are, we're beginning to find that we have a whole new realm of discovering the world around us, the universe around us, but also just what's happening in our bodies, especially when it comes to being healing and disease. So when you feel this and recognize this in your patient and you're teaching them, so they are learning how you sense it in an animal, and then does this enable them more to understand a little bit more about themselves?
Yes. Yes, this time of moving into the age of Aquarius from the denser time of the Piscean age has been quite a shift, and we certainly are being asked right now, I think, to catch up because of these radiation influences that you mentioned earlier. However, yes, I see that clients can easily learn to feel where their energy becomes stuck or bound or depleted, and they can easily rebalance it once we start to focus in on the body.
Well, let me come towards this with an objective counterpoint. Suppose a client comes to you. They have an ailment of whatever nature. How does understanding and feeling more sensitivity help them heal? I mean, we have broken bones, we can get lacerations and bruises and everything like that, but then ailment comes in all sorts of ways. How does this emotional intelligence, this feeling, this awareness on the subtle level help a person heal or an animal?
Well, let's begin by agreeing that we need to feel it to heal it. And Mother Nature has a wonderful gift that she gives us, and it's the gift of dissociation, and that's how we get by, and that's how we survive, and that's,
even Mother Nature when she sends so much blood to the fracture that you referred to in an attempt to cast the ailment. So the job is to feel it and then to learn how to dilate the structure so that the chi can easily be moved through. And we do with breath. We do it with movement. We do it with awareness. We do it with sound. Movement, breath, and sound resets the body. Often we're bound, we're frozen, we're rigid, we're holding the energy, and there become backed up areas of energy that are depleted or energy areas of body armor that are bound. Nonetheless, all of these can be reinstated easily if we just begin to feel what's going on, find a way to be in relationship with it, and then consciously move the chi just via the breath right through the belly of, let's say, what hurts.
Indeed, I've heard many accounts of how we underestimate how much emotion has a somatic effect on us. For instance, fear often manifests as pain. And then in addition to maybe giving physical therapy or treating with drugs or whatever, that there have been many testimonies of people who have discovered that they had an underlying fear of something. They discover what it is. They find a way to resolve it. And when they alleviate the fear from whatever therapy, then all of a sudden their pains become less. And another example is that anger can cause ailments or influence the propensity of ailments such as multiple sclerosis. Not that all MS is related to anger. But when I speak to healers, you name the emotion, and they may name a litany of ailments that they can influence, either to cause or to exacerbate. Have you found that just basically how we feel is going to influence our propensity, or at least heal our healing rate when we do have something for whatever reason?
For me, I'm very much deeply bound to Chinese medicine and the powerful law of the five elements, through which the organs state themselves. The anger, of course, is a representation of the liver energy, for instance. So I see a lot of right side armor patterns right around the right rib cage area and the lower front area, right where the liver is, because, you know, many of us have been asked to stuff our anger because, you know, it's not very pleasant, or certain people don't like to hear what I have to say when I'm angry. So my liver sometimes gets bound with armored ribs and body armor that builds up to manage that liver. Kidneys, where we may hold fear or chase fear from, would be the deep recesses of the riverbed between the hips down to the pubic bone, the second chakra riverbed, where fears, rational and irrational, might reside. But I see a lot of ureteral, genital, reproductive, low back issues. If it's a dog, we see a lot of ureteral, genital, a lot of low back, a lot of knee ACL problems for this area when fear is bound or frozen into the body, and so the kidneys slowly retreat. So yes, I have a somatic relationship with the body, because I recognize that the body has enormous intelligence, and I have various ways in which I read the body that gives me information on how to proceed.
And you mentioned understanding chi and the five elements and so forth, and I understand that you work with yoga and meditation. So you have found that some of the discoveries handed down from the ancients have explained some of what you're discovering and have been a guide to you to some sense, have they not, and helped you in your diagnosis? Yeah.
For me, Chinese medicine speaks the same language as Taoism, which speaks the same language as applied kinesiology, which speaks the same language as so many of the modalities that you discussed in the beginning when you introduced me that I'm involved with. They all speak through the instrument of this body-mind. And when I find various ways to make sense of it, such as Chinese medicine does for me, it's hard to avoid.
Indeed. And once you use these ancient tried and true techniques, and you diagnose on a more sensitive level, how does this lead you towards techniques of healing? What's next once you find something, you find out where it is and maybe understand its cause?
So imagine I could ask the body, what is well and what is challenged right now? And it could spit that list out to me, which it can through applied kinesiology. I can identify every organ and every gland that feels compromised, as well as the structures, as well as the skin, as well as the eyes, as well as the teeth. And I can go through, once I identify what the list is, the laundry list, if you will, I can identify who wants to be the spokesperson. And so the liver might come forward and I can say, what's your biggest challenge? And it can tell me it's microbial, bacterial, parasitic, fungal yeast overgrowth, a virus. It can tell me if there's a food allergy. It can tell me if there's heavy metal or chemical poisoning or toxic load. It can tell me if it's allergic to scars, if there are scars on the skin that are a problem for the conductivity of information, those neuropeptides that you referred to earlier. So once we identify what the problem is and why, then we can say, oh, well, I've got a whole bunch of things from nature over here that fixes that.
This is extraordinary.
Which one do you want?
It's amazing how you ask, don't tell. You can ask the body. Because when you ask by a human being rather than a tool, you don't have to be limited to specifics. Hey, Kim, I'm hearing a little echo when I speak. Do you hear it?
Every once in a while.
Okay. Well, anyway, about ask by a human rather than a tool. If, for instance, a doctor takes a blood test, well, they'll do a blood workup, but they have to specifically look for this or look for that. Or if they do a scan with a machine, they're looking for specific things. And that machine is only geared towards looking towards one specific thing that it was built for. But when a thinking, feeling person learns how to be the tool, then you can take in a holistic way and understand. I understand that you work with extreme illness and injuries, and you specialize in chronic disorders that don't often respond to traditional medicine. You work with athletes, high-performance individuals, and more. So, you know, we are our greatest tools. That's just like a carpenter or a plumber. The greatest tools is their hands. Then they can pick up the tool chest. Well, we are our greatest tools, and we're starting to realize this a little bit more, aren't we, Kim?
Yes.
My goodness. My goodness. Now, you're located in Pennsylvania, are you not?
I am in Pennsylvania. I'm in Chester County. And in a little village known as Chester Springs, and I'm in the far western suburbs of Philadelphia.
Yes, indeed. And your clients come to you from many different places, but you work with a lot of people in the Philadelphia area, do you not?
That's correct. That's correct. And I travel regularly to California, up north to the Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire area, as well as Maui in Florida.
You know, I invite people to your site, kpickett.com. That's kpickett.com, where you talk about bioenergetic healing, the consultations that you do, bioenergetic testing, herbal homeopathic treatments, lots of testimonials, as I mentioned. And you have a list of workshops that you do. And you sometimes travel to do your workshops as well, don't you, Kim?
That's correct, David.
You have amazing stories on here of some of the animals that you worked on and a nice picture gallery and everything like this. Do you find, you've been doing this for more than 25 years, Kim, do you find that people are seeking more this direction than they were, say, when you first began working in this area?
Oh, yes. And I would say it's exponential at this point. Every year over year, it's just exponential as we come into our power. And, you know, again, these times that you've referred to already a number of times here tonight, these times that we're up against, this rapid change, whether it's in the planet or our inside selves, that we're being asked to sustain, just keeps whipping us along and going quicker and quicker and quicker and more quickly. As we empower ourselves through that, those individuals end up at my front door.
I'm not surprised that the last quarter century has brought a great increase of people recognizing and seeking out this kind of understanding and using it in their diagnosis, in their therapy, in their healing process, because I believe this is the world trend. Often on the show, we talk about how we're coming out of physical time, which was the machine age, that's physical, and more into, well, I've called it an age of romanticism and an age of reason. But those are not the only words I can describe this. But the rising romanticism is also a rising emotional intelligence. And when we have that, that's when we become aware on the subtle level. And on the subtle level is where we can recognize the sympathetic vibrations of energy. And energy is what you work with. Now, did you discover this first through your own healing process? Did you, when you were after your accident, so did you feel these things inside of yourself, or did you start reading? Yeah, you felt them inside of yourself.
Well, I was in a lot of pain, and this was back in the 70s, and so we didn't have much available to us, so I had to seek out something called a spiritual healer. That's what those were my choices back then. Pretty much it. We didn't have all the individual modalities. So, you know, I made my way through that and made my way through the 80s, and healed myself beautifully, came along quickly, and then was able to continue my own studies.
And then through your own experience and your discoveries from your ailment, you found out that you could bring this to others. That's an amazing,
healer,
that's an amazing
healer, heal thyself. And so I had to learn that, and I learned it the hard way. There was a lot of pain involved, but pain is often a very good motivator, and sometimes I've said this to my clients. In the past, I don't attract those sorts of clients now. Everybody's interested in getting better now. But in the past, I've had to wish people the well, and some people need a little bit more pain. That's certainly what I needed.
Yes, yes, and you're understanding this. And, you know, understanding is really the beginning of finding the right path. And your workshops might be helping with that. I see on your site you have workshops listed of animal communication, level 1 and 2, horse as a healer of the intuitive body, and horse as a healer of the intuitive body, too. Can you tell us a little bit about the workshops that you do, Kim?
Yeah, let's talk about animal communication first. That is a beautiful journey from the head down into the heart. You know, I was working on a horse, and this was an Olympic horse in George Morris's barn. This was back in the 80s, and he had a bad shoulder. And all of a sudden, I started having all sorts of feelings when I was working on it. My heart started ticking quickly, and I started perspiring, and I started breathing quickly, and everything got, and I felt like I was going in circles and in circles and in circles and in circles, and underneath my hands as I was working on the horse, I could feel his heart got quicker, his respiration got quicker. I could feel him getting revved up and excited. He was standing in the cross ties, and I remember at the time thinking, this is a really odd experience. I feel like I was just caught up in a whirlwind with this horse. And I finished the session and I went to the stable manager and I said, you know, I was working on this horse's right shoulder and I had this weird experience. Did this horse ever have some sort of a traumatic insult ever happen? Oh my goodness, yes. You know, about 6 years ago, he was standing, in fact, in the very cross ties. You were working on him, and there was a cat up on the beam, and it jumped off the beam and jumped down onto his back, and he couldn't see it, but he could feel it, and it scared the bejeebers out of him. But the cross ties were holding him. He wanted to gallop off, you know, fear and flight. And he couldn't, and he went in circles and went in circles, and he bound himself with the shoulder with the cross tie, and he was dangling, you know, with 3 feet off the ground when this was over. And I recognized in that very moment that I had something new to learn, and I went and I traveled and I studied with Penelope Smith, who's the grandmother of the interspecies communication movement. But nonetheless, that started me on a very long understanding of animal communication. And that one-day workshop, the Animal Communication Level 1, is just that. It's a journey from the head into the heart. And people leave that experience, and sometimes they dye their hair, and sometimes they divorce their husbands, and sometimes they end up going home and buying a horse or a dog or something. But it's usually a pretty profound experience, because opening up our ears to the animals is just an amazing journey.
So
that's
it's kind of like
animal
asking on the physical level.
It's kind of like what?
Asking on the physical level.
Yes. Yes. And receiving it.
Yeah.
Receiving it through the physical level, because it's a package. You know, it's a whole download. It can be something you see, something you smell, something you feel. It can be the whole download. It can be just a word. It could be a thought. It could be a memory. You know, the instrument, the telepathic intuitive instrument, opens in very odd ways. And so, yes, it's often a sensate experience in the body and of the body.
That is amazing, you know, being able to detect and then being able to work with. A lot of what you're saying reminds me of some of the stories I've heard, how even traditional medicine is starting to move towards this. Take a case in point is cancer treatment, where they use image therapy, and they say, think about these little cells with big mouths and going out and attacking the cancer cells and eating them.
Pac-Man.
And chopping them up. Pac-Man, that's right. Little Pac-Man going after that. And you know what? According to many sources in traditional medicine itself, they say that they believe that this has absolutely worked with many patients.
Oh, there are clinical trials to support that. That's right.
So using our minds, and as you're telling us with the intuitive discoveries that you were put into practice, is using our feelings can be as powerful as a splint, and as moving as a therapeutic drug or more, without the side effects, huh?
Without the side effects. Now, Horses Healer is another workshop I'd just like to mention for a moment. It's just a two-hour experiential in the barn. No experience is necessary with horses. Some people have flown in for the weekend to do an animal communication and a Horses Healer in one weekend. But nonetheless, it's a two-hour experiential where we come in and we meet horses, which are prey animals. You and I are more the predators. So we make our way into the prey animal who's inclined towards fear and flight, and the freeze pattern, which we humans certainly know all too well. And we learn a basic energy pattern for humandom, and then we take the same pattern and put it on the horses, and we watch it in the horses, and we change their whole energetics, and we see the huge results that yields us. Hello, David. David.
Hold on. Get you back.
Okay. I'm here.
Can you hear me now?
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes, now I can hear you.
You can hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, how about that? Had a little technical problem there. We got back. That's it. Found my way back into the world of communication. That's not surprising that occurred while I was talking to you, Kim.
It was fun for me too, David.
Okay. Well, that is amazing. So my question is, in addition to helping an animal that has sustained an injury of some kind or another and has a physical memory, are there other times that you apply these methods and techniques on animals other than an animal that has been injured? Are there behavioral therapies that are required from time to time with animals, just as there are with humans?
Absolutely. And by the way, the majority of my clients are oriented towards prevention. I get a handful of clients a week that are, you know, 911 clients. But the majority of my clients have a bigger picture of what they're looking for, and often they start in a treatment program for themselves, and they want to share it with their animal, so then their animal comes. Or it starts the other way. They love their animal. That animal starts in a treatment program, and they say, hey, you know, I could do this for myself. But the physical memory, the physical imprint in the body is phenomenal somatic work that is very freeing. For panic disorders, for anxiety, for somatic pain, phantom pain, certainly for amputees. But the biodynamic work that's available, helping people move their chi, their breath, their energy, whatever you want to call it, it's all the same thing, for heaven's sakes. Moving it through the disenfranchised parts of the body helps regain the balance and the clarity and the ability for the body to rebalance itself.
And this is how alternative medicine has gone from alternative to complementary medicine,
yes,
in addition to traditional, to actually now we have integrated medicine, because more and more people are discovering the very things that you've been working with all these years. And our whole main society in America, and yeah, around the world, I move towards this. And it's not just medicine and healing. We're doing this in our business models as we change the old hierarchies of power and dominance to interactive methods of communication. We start realizing the emotions of a worker play on the results of the company, and certainly how we are going to manifest in our bodies is reflective of how we're manifesting emotionally. This is all a reflection of the boats that are rising in this tide of rising cycles, as the what I call the emotional cycle of the world is rising, and the intellectual cycle of the world is rising. So we are understanding what we're feeling because of emotional intellectual highs. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. And we're talking with Kim Pickett, who works in the Philadelphia region with amazing abilities here of energetic work and healing, bringing in the methodologies of the ancients that she was attracted to after her own experience of an injury, and finding her path to healing when some of the traditional methods of her around her at the time had failed. And she has manifested this into her own work for more than a quarter of a century with animals and with people. Kim Pickett, who you can find at K Pickett, KPICKETT.com, will have a lot of material there for bioenergetic healing and what the consultation she does and the therapy and the treatments that she has, the workshops, testimonials. It's all there, folks, at KPickett.com. So do you see that more healers are moving in the direction that you've been working on these days, Kim? Are more people picking this up?
Well, I think we have much more individuation of modalities that are available, and people are going into one or two of them. I started very early. I have a wide berth of experience, and I've created my own system as a result of that. I don't see too much of that, but I do see a lot of individuals that choose particular modalities to treat with.
Well, you're a person who's been ahead of your time in your lifetime, but it's seeing the world catch up to you in your lifetime, I think, which is really exciting.
Yes, yes. I just have to keep my feet moving, just like the rest of us, huh?
Oh, well, you do. You do that through experience. I mean, every healing is a new experience. Every patient is bringing us something new, and it adds to the reservoir of your interactive experience, and there's no substitute for that. No substitute for experience. I'm just glad because people turn towards this. More people are going to turn to you rather than limit their choices to methods that may or may not be effective for them. And then they're open to this kind of awareness. They'll seek someone out like you and you. And there are others in the country, in different parts of the country, who have been doing this. I'm very pleased to say this is the direction where we're headed. This is the star off the horizon that we are moving to. And thank goodness for that. You know, you mentioned the ages of Aquarius, these great ages from Pisces to Aquarius, these last 2,160 years each. And it's interesting that a lot of the things that you cite with the five element, with the chi, or if you want the Hindu term prana, that you're referring to the ancients. In a great scheme of cycles of thousands of years, I do believe that in many ways we're entering into the same cyclic position that the ancients were in when they discovered and documented these wonderful discoveries that have been handed down through the ages. And as we're getting back into that type of cycle of awareness, there has been an increase in popularity of the Eastern modalities and religions. So we're rising so far up out of a darker time that we're almost catching up with the past.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And they apparently, as I think back on the Hopi and I think back on the Mayan calendar, they had such an understanding of the mathematics of these larger cycles. It's just a whole radical new place that we've arrived in. Everything has changed so dramatically, and we're being asked to catch up and adapt and evolve more quickly, if you will, to keep up with these earth changes.
You know, and it's recognizing the rhythms of the universe and recognizing the rhythms within ourselves. The Hindus would study Kalpa, which are cycles, and they understood the great eras, the yugas, from which Hesiod got the four ages of stone and silver and bronze and gold and so forth. But when we understand the rhythms of the universe, we can understand the rhythms in our body. I had the privilege of being having a treatment by Yeshe Dandan, who was the personal physician for the Dalai Lama for 20 years, and I met him in New York. And he works with the rhythmic pulse system. And what he will do is put his fingers gently on each of your wrists. He'll take hand in hand, feel the pulses, and he can tell that there's a difference in the rhythm. The timing that he may feel in one hand versus the other, he will lead to diagnosis. And after I met with him, he said, don't eat this. What? Don't eat sausage. Don't eat maple syrup. Cut back on butter. Well, I happened to live near Denny's at the time. I used to go to Denny's all the time, and I'm not faulting Denny's. I'm choosing it's a good restaurant. And I used to get, this is what I got for breakfast almost every morning. And I didn't go in there saying, and Yeshe Dandan doesn't know my friends, that somebody went and told him I was having for breakfast. He told me not to eat what I was eating every day. And he could tell by these readings and other methods. So, and one of it was the pulse system. So when we understand these things, and who would have thought, if you told this to a doctor 80 years ago, we probably would have laughed.
Yes.
And now we're moving that way.
But it's a basic tenet of traditional Chinese medicine. And all the practitioners are taught to use pulse as a form of diagnostics.
Yes, indeed. So it's the breath of life, the pulse, and the rhythms that are within us. Now, you don't use drugs, but you do use some herbal homeopathic treatments as well in your...
I use glandulars, herbals, homeopathics. I'll use oils. I'll use laser. I'll use Rife. So I use different items, but yes, all items that are resonant with the body.
It's amazing. And I've enjoyed reading the animal stories on your site. And these are very heartwarming stories of the horses, the dogs, and so forth that you work with. And they're like little mini books. I enjoy reading them.
Yes. Well, I've sure enjoyed working with them. They're, every one of them has been a phenomenal experience for me, too. The animals open up a whole different world of possibility, of course, because we humans have so many thoughts and beliefs already formed about things, and the animals are a little bit freer about that, so sometimes we can have some pretty quick healing going on with these animals.
So the intelligence of animals is not impeded by education.
Huh. Imagine education slowing it all down.
Yes, indeed. You know, with this wonderful work you're doing, we've talked about cycles of thousands of years and cycles we've referred to of hundreds of years when I mentioned the emotional intellectual rise of world trends. But there are some more immediate cycles in the world around us that are influencing us, things that you're finding in your patients, namely the sunspot cycle. You had mentioned to me in a recent conversation that you have found that there is some effects of solar radiation that you're finding in your animals. This is about a 22-year cycle. There are other cycles in this, but one of the more commonly found followed is a 22-year sunspot cycle, which peaked last year, a solar maxima that increases the amount of radiation that does reach the surface of the Earth. What have you been finding in your patients, Kim, as a result of this?
David, last June, I started getting spotty clients testing to radiation poisoning, and I'd say, hey, you're using too much of the microwave. You know, do you live close to a tower? I mean, what is this radiation? And we could never figure it out. By July the 5th, it was the day after July the 4th, coming back to work, I start testing in the morning. The first client from that day forward till today, whether it's a horse, whether it's a dog, whether it's a cat that only lives inside, or whether it's a human, everyone is testing to radiation poisoning. So I did some research at spaceweather.com and with Heather Carlini at the Carlini Institute and other resources, of course, and have learned so much about what's going on here with the solar flare cycle. You know, prior to all this starting, we didn't think we could really live in X-class flares, but we are routinely, over July, we had X-class flares hitting us again. We had them over Valentine's Day. We have been in C-class, M-class, and even X-class flares since for over a year now. And the brains are fried, and the nervous system downstream from the brains are fried, and the mucous membranes of the body are all corroded and ripped apart. Our lungs and our lymph, I mean, the whooping cough, we just heard it. It's now a national emergency. We're back to really having a problem with that. That's just an extension of these lungs that have been in vitro and not cleared. We've got so much radiation poisoning us now and creating an incredible increase to our already increased toxic load that we're all being asked to carry.
So the cycles around us are not only just influencing our methods of recognition and treatment, but they are actually influencing the illnesses themselves.
Yes. In fact, they're creating bodies that become very good hosts to all sorts of microbials.
My goodness. Well, it pays to be aware of what's going on around us and find sensitive ways of detecting this.
Yes, and helping the body to clear. So anyone who's listening right now and until this abates, which it was supposed to happen last year, but it's just increasing, the moving average is an increase. I can't help but think we're really being asked to adapt at an alarming rate. Nonetheless, we have to clear our metabolic pathways, our detoxification pathways, whether it's peeing, whether it's pooping, whether it's getting the lungs clear, getting the skin clear, whether it's hot baths, whether it's lots and lots of water, whether it's lots and lots of steam vegetables, whether it's juicing, whether, you know, however it is that you want to handle the metabolic load, we want to get clearing this and get in front of it so that when the radiation finally abates, we can clean up the mess from there inside of our bodies and get on with adapting.
And some of the things that you mentioned, they're just simple home remedies that can help so many things. I'm not saying that we substitute and get away with the medical system, anything like that. You know, if I have a heart attack, I hope somebody picks up the phone, 911, and gets an ambulance and gets me to the nearest hospital. That's where I'm going.
But that's right.
But there's so much that we can do ourselves to help once we realize that we need a clearing, a cleansing, or something like that. Simple things that have been tried and true over the years. So can you tell us a little bit about bioenergetic testing, Kim?
So this form of applied kinesiology used with the body allows us to talk to each of the organs and the glands through their own specific neural plexus, their own specific neural points, their own specific communication points, if you will. And we get to say, how are you? And they get to tell us if they're doing well or if they're not feeling so well. And then if they're not feeling so well, they get to tell us exactly why. I can have whatever vial of item on the body, and it can identify exactly what it is the offender, whether it's a food or a microbial, a virus, a bacteria, a parasite, whether it's some sort of an offending food that there's an allergy or a sensitivity to, or some sort of a heavy chemical or heavy metal molecule. But the body can identify that, and then we can go and ask the body exactly what will support it to restore its function.
Oh, boy, I hope we find out more about this. You know, Kim, I'd like to mention some of the publications and media exposure you had, if you don't mind my listing those. You had an article in Philly Fit magazine in 2007, Palm Beach Post, where you could one read Machines, Human Touch, Used in Equine Healthcare. You were in Holistic Horse, the article Eyes, Gateway to the Soul. And in Philadelphia, you were on WCOJ AM, 1420 AM radio. You were on the AP with your article, Psychics Say More, People Seeking Contact with Deceased Pets. And you were on CNN Radio, What's Your Deal? And The Suburban and Wayne Times you were on, The Trend, Mainline Life, Pleasure Hunt Magazine, and Evening Phoenix Newspaper, where they publish Kim Pickett Makes Horse Her Life Work. So you've been well established at this for quite a while. Do you find that when you teach people to understand this a little bit more, that they wind up using the sensitivity for their own pets and their animals after you've educated them?
Oh, yes, and feel free to take a look at my website and the testimonials, and you'll see so many wonderful experiences people have had, not only with their pets, but with their children. You'll see so many of the comments after the animal communication class, people saying things like, this isn't about communicating with animals at all. This is about communicating with everything and everyone. This has helped me with my husband. This has helped me with my child. This has helped me with my plants, with my pets. I hear this over and over. And, of course, the horse's healer experience in the barn, that is a real immersion experience. It's very experiential. It's very, very unusual because of the exercises that we have you do in the barn and then with the horses, because they're incredibly sensitive and intuitive, and we begin to work with that sensitive instrument of the horse immediately.
Now, the language of animals is not necessarily the kind of linear type of speech that we construct between ourselves, is it? Is it more of an image-based language, would you say?
Well, yes. The language of the intuitive is many. It's not only something that we see, like little prints of pictures, but it's feeling states and sensory input and emotions. And I like to kind of put out a whole package to an animal, a picture of it, the feeling state of it. I like to align it up with the words and the thoughts and the sensations and the feelings and my intention to clearly put across to you this and what this is, so that there's no way that the animal can't receive me. And then, of course, there's the issue of receiving. So sending is sending like a download of many different sensate experiences at once. And then the receiving is about being open and beginning to be able to receive it how it comes. Because sometimes it's a knowing, and sometimes it's a little word, and sometimes it's a picture. Sometimes the picture starts to move, and then there are words with it, and there are happy sounds, and, you know, there are all sorts of different ways to receive the information, but we just want the intuitive telepathic instrument to be open, to begin to start to adapt in order to allow itself to receive different and varied impulses.
And receiving is such an important part. You know, I believe you're an amazingly receptive person. So I guess the first way to begin talking with an animal, communicating with an animal, is listening to an animal. If I may make a parallel, you know, there's been an increased interest in meditation as opposed to just prayer. I heard a wonderful description between the two. And where one said, prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening to God.
Yes, yes. And they're both useful, and I enjoy them both, and I have, for different reasons and different times, inclined towards one or the other, but yes, they're
and
very different.
Once
and when
you're
we
receptive.
Connect, and when we do connect with the animals, yes, it is the listening, and then we say hello. Because there has to be a connection, because we've been walking around in space pretty much assuming they can't hear our thoughts. So they've been hearing us bumbling around and being who and what we are. So when we want to change that and actually connect with them, it's a good idea to say hello, because otherwise they just think we're bumbling along like we were prior to that moment. Hello? David, I can't hear you.
Hi, Kim. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry about that. We had a little trouble with Skype. We got a little message on the board and then Skyped back in. No problem. So I believe I left off with a question that if an animal senses that you're receptive to them, does that make them more receptive to you?
Yes.
And it's a wonderful language of communication, yes.
Every animal is different, of course, and they all have their own history, which informs how they respond. But I try and widen my field and soften my field as much as possible, ground down into the earth, which means bringing my energy down through my body. I just have to bring my breath down through the floor of the pelvis, down through my legs, and out through the bottoms of my feet.
Oh,
and
my
just
goodness,
allow...
I can't believe you said that. I'm sorry, I just had an explosion.
And I'm just allowing this egg-shaped bioenergetic field around my body to just widen and soften and drop down. So that experience you just had is just the same experience that people have in animal communication, because you're just merging with a field that's already been created, and you just drop down a few stories quickly because you rooted deeper, more deeply into the earth, and there are people that have come before you that have done that, and you just connected right through to that field. And that's what happens when we connect with the animals. And it happens rather easily. But yeah, opening that circuit, opening that channel with your intention, following through with saying hello. Hey, it's my intention to talk with you. Hey, I heard about this lady and she suggested that I try this. So I'm trying it with you tonight. You know, just sharing that with your pet, because suddenly they get to have a conversation.
My goodness. And I'm sorry I blurted in and interrupted you, but it was something that you said.
grounded your instrument. You dropped down into the deep, cool, dark yin of the Mother Earth, the great neutralizer. Anything can happen down there.
If we're only receptive to it instead of trying to be man against nature, please. Guess who's going to win? Nature's been out a little longer. So, and we're part of
a little
nature.
Bigger.
A little bit bigger, and we're a subset of it. We're not a, you know, we're not autonomous. But when you mentioned about drawing the energy in and letting it flow down through you, I found, as far back as the 70s with me, that if somebody said, oh, I've got a sore shoulder, you know, could you rub it a little bit and get some of the pain out or something? And I would do that and say, that's up a little bit. But then when I would allow the energy where the pain was to come in through my hands, up my arms, down through my spine, through my legs, and out the bottom of my feet. And then I would imagine that I was sending it to the core of the earth, the hot core, where I'm allowing it to just burn up and be purified and gone.
Yeah.
And then when I would do that, they say, oh, that's much better. Thank you.
Yeah. It's better for everybody, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it was a pleasant surprise to hear you describe it in that way.
Yeah.
So we all have this ability. So if I'm having this explosion, well, I mean, anybody can. I mean, I wasn't born. There wasn't a star in the east or something when I was born. I'm just like everybody else. So if I could discover this on my own, if I can recognize what you're saying, does this mean that we all have this ability that you're using, Kim?
Of course. And it's hardwired into us when we're born. It's just we don't use it, so we lose it. But all we have to do is start to work with it again, and it immediately comes back. You know, the Aborigines, in their culture, they believe they can transcend time and space. They routinely go walkabout into the deep thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of desert, and they go out as a clan, and they split up, and they go for months and months at a time in their different directions. But seemingly from nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, they all rendezvous at the same time. That's because they're all communicating through that morphic field that Dr. Rupert Sheldrake has identified and run clinical trials, and his best-selling book describes, let's see, how dogs know when their owners are coming home. But it's this morphic field through which we can transcend time and space. It's how the CIA had their remote viewing unit during the Cold War, right. And the Russians were ahead of us, which is why we created our remote viewing unit.
Because it worked.
Because it worked. The Americans got afraid when they started hearing about what the Russians were able to do.
It is amazing. And these things can be used for good purposes as well. A lot of things that are invented in war wind up being for good purposes. Computers, sort of as we know them, were originally for missile guidance systems and so forth. And a lot of the tools we have were weapons originally. So we can use things one way or another. If once we recognize what the tools are and make the decisions of what we want to do. But Kim, I thank you so much. Really, for sharing what you've discovered in yourself and what you've helped others to discover and to use, which is so pertinent to where we are going in the world trends, because this is representative of the consciousness that we're moving toward at an ever-increasing rate as we embark on this new century and the century beyond, and a good bit of that beyond that. Kim Pickett, I thank you so much for joining us tonight. Folks, find Kim at kpickett.com. That's kpickett.com. And you can communicate with her from there, request a consultation, find out about her workshops, read their amazing stories, and learn a little bit about this energy work and healing, which is so important to us all today, humans, animals, and all life. Kim? Thank you so much for being part of the show and edifying our listeners with your experience. And
David,
do you have any
parting
words
for us? It's been fun spending this time with you. Thank you for the message you're getting out into the world. These larger cycles, we need to take a look at them so that we can get clear with our thinking and our intention. Thank you very much.
And getting clear with our thinking and our intention is something that we can all do. Thank you for your leadership and your inspiration on this. Kim Pickett of kpickett.com. Folks, you've been listening to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeier. Be sure to listen in every Thursday night, 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. Thank you.